Welcome to Breakthrough Success. I'm your host, Mark Caberti, founder of the Content Marketing Plaza, bringing you 3 new episodes each week where I and top-level guests teach you how to take your business to the next level and achieve your breakthrough. And before we jump into today's episode, let me ask you a quick question. How much would your life change if you could make 6 figures from your content? Imagine being able to quit your 9-to-5 job, do what you love for a living, and spend more time with your family. That's what we help our students do at the Content Marketing Plaza, an 8-week program that will help you build your way to 6 figures via your content. You can learn more about the Plaza by heading over to contentmarketingplaza.com, which will be in the show notes. All right, let's jump right back into the episode. And when we're thinking about all the results that we can achieve, we shouldn't just be thinking about moving a little more forward, accomplishing something slightly more than what we're doing. We should be thinking about superstar results. We should be thinking about these kinds of really mind-boggling results. And we should really set the goals a lot higher for ourselves. So it's one thing to set those really high goals, and it's another thing to accomplish them. So we're going to talk about both of those, setting these really big goals and getting them done. So we have a very special guest with us today. He actually had an 8-year career in the NFL that does include a Super Bowl victory. So since then, today's guest, he is now a motivational speaker and certified master neuro-linguistic programming practitioner. He helps people get out of their own way, overcome bad habits and thought patterns that do not serve their life agendas, and create their own custom-designed, fulfilling lives. And in addition to that Super Bowl that I mentioned earlier, he's also played in the Rose Bowl, and he was also a member of the Screen Actors Guild. So today's guest for episode 300 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than Chucky Akobi. Chucky, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks, Mark. I really appreciate you having me. I know that your listeners are people who think big, who have lofty ambitions and dreams. And, you know, my story started back when I was a teenager and, you know, kind of how I went about that. And so what we'll talk about really will give you insight into how you at your stage, not just you, Mark, but you, the listener, at your stage in your journey, how you can pretty much create whatever kind of life you want. And you're in total control of that.
Chucky, really awesome stuff right from the onset. I'm sure this is going to be a really epic time together. I'm wondering, though, if we can go into that background right away. If you could share just your background. It's like how you got to the NFL, but also why you decided to become a motivational speaker and take the path that you're currently on.
Well, I'm originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and, you know, fast forward a little bit just for a second. I did get drafted by my hometown team, and I started my journey to the NFL probably back in 1986 when I was about 7 years old. And I spent a lot of time outside playing, just like most kids do at that stage in life. And, you know, being in a home with my mom, who's a single parent, she wasn't heavily involved in my extracurricular activities. Sports was just something that I naturally was attracted to. It was something where I felt like myself. And it's interesting as a 7-year-old to think, you know, how do you even know what it feels like to feel like yourself? Well, it's kind of like being in love. It's like if somebody has to tell you that you're being yourself, then, you know, you don't know. You just know when something's for you. You know that feeling. And, you know, at different points in time, I wanted to play different sports. I have to admit, my first love was always baseball. And the Pittsburgh Pirates were always my favorite professional team above any other one. And I thought I was going to do that for a long time. There was different points in time where I wanted to be a pro wrestler like Hulk Hogan or Randy Savage. And, you know, when I finally got to high school, I went to a high school in New York called Trinity Pauling. It's about an hour north of New York City, an amazing institution for young men, all boys boarding school. The thing is, when I got there at age 13, I was really still on this path in my mind as a kid that I was going to be a professional athlete. Now, when I got there, the school's pretty small. There's only about 260 boys in our school at any given time. And because the school's so small, we don't have gym class. There's no physical education. And the way that Trinity Pauling meets the New York standard for physical education is that every single person must play a sport all three seasons. And we had different sports. Some were recreational, and then there's different levels, the varsity, junior varsity, thirds, and so on. And it was the fall. I was, you know, I'm a baseball player in my mind at this time at age 13, but I got to pick a sport. So I always like football. I'm from Pittsburgh. If you're from Pittsburgh, you like football. It's just like default. You know, Steelers run the city. So football has always been attractive to me. I always liked it. It always looked complicated on TV to me as a kid and violent. But I said, I'll give this a shot. And, you know, I started playing football at 13. I didn't even really know the rules. All I knew was like my favorite players from the video games, and I knew the Steelers, but that was about it. And so I first started, I wanted to be a running back like Christian Okoye, the Nigerian Nightmare, who used to play for the Kansas City Chiefs. And I didn't know what that all entailed. I just wanted the ball. I mean, if I'm going to play, I want the ball. And that's the way I felt about it. So it's interesting because I go back to that first practice that I ever put on a football helmet in my life. First time I ever had pads on and first time I've ever played football. And I was playing running back, and then we were going through practice and they called a play where I get the ball. So I get the ball and I do what I think I'm supposed to do and try to gain yards. And it was interesting because I ran over about four people and dragged about another three people with me. And I got up, and after getting hit a bunch of times, and I felt like, well, that wasn't so bad because I'd never been hit before. So, you know, we're going through practice and comes up to another play where I get the ball and I run this kid over and took off about 60 yards for a touchdown. And I remember standing in the end zone thinking, this is the easiest sport I've ever played in my life. And so at that point in time, at age 13, that's when my focus shifted to football. And I knew that that's what I wanted to do. Now, again, Trinity Pauling is a outstanding academic institution. And we have a reputation for raising boys into impactful men who do a lot of big things in this country, things on Wall Street, things in politics, things in business. However, let's, you know, back then we're talking, I was at TP from 92 to 96. It was not a football factory. There was not a ton of people coming out of there playing football. So you can imagine that this wasn't necessarily the place that I thought was ideal to make my dream come true. However, I was going to do it regardless. You know, even though people are telling me, you know, people from TP don't go to the NFL, people from TP don't play Division I football, all that meant to me was that nobody had done it yet. Not that it couldn't be done. And so I'm playing football, and I got better and better through those first 3 years. And after my junior year, I wasn't being recruited by anybody at all. I'm talking no one. And it didn't make me feel any kind of way. It just helped me realize that I needed to do something. Something's got to happen. And so I remember walking on campus after dinner. So it was about 6:30 in the evening. And there was like this voice in my head. I was just thinking, you know, you're just walking, drifting off, thinking. And I had this thought. It was like a voice told me to go to computer lab and type a letter to Mack Brown. And Mack Brown at the time was the head coach at the UNC, North Carolina Tar Heels. He's most famous for being the head coach at Texas, and he's since retired. But I felt back then that was the best place for me with the balance of academics and athletics, and that's where I thought I should be going. So I decided to write him a letter, and I went to computer lab because back then everybody didn't have iPads and iPhones. Like, there was a lab and everybody used the same computers. So I went back and went to computer lab and typed this letter to Mac Brown. I was like, yeah, this is going to be cool. I'm going to let him know that I'm here. If he's not going to come to me, I'm going to go to him. And then I got another idea. And, you know, me being from Pittsburgh, being the crazy Steeler fan that I was, my favorite player back then was a Hall of Fame defensive back, Rod Woodson. And Rod played at Purdue University. So I said, well, I might as well just send a letter to Purdue too. And so I wrote another one. And long story shorter, I sent a letter to every single Division I-A football coach in America. Wow. And I stayed there in that computer lab till well past lights out. I missed study hall. I missed all kinds of stuff, but I had a plan. And I wrote a letter to every single coach. And I said, I'm going to reach out to everyone. At the end of the day, when you think about it, you can't play at all of these schools anyway. You just need one. So I didn't want to leave any stone unturned. And so I wrote a letter to every single coach. I got back to my room, had all this paper that I took from the computer lab, and then it hit me. How are you going to mail all of this stuff out? It cost money for the envelopes. It cost money for VHS tapes. For any millennials out there listening, VHS tape is what we had way before Netflix. So, but, you know, I had to get these tapes and I had to mail these packages out. So what I started doing was just borrowing change. Like, hey, you got a quarter I can borrow. You got 5 cents I can borrow. And started collecting some money just so I could mail this stuff out. So little by little, every couple days, I would mail out a package, two packages, three packages. And I really didn't know how it was going to play out. But about 2 weeks into it, maybe 3 weeks, I went to my mailbox after lunch and I had a letter in there, and it was from University of Pittsburgh. And I was like, you can imagine, I thought I had won the Super Bowl in that moment. So I was, and me being from Pittsburgh, I'm like, I'm going home. That's where Dan Marino went. I'm going to be a Pitt Panther. I'm from Squirrel Hill, which is down the street from where the old Pitt Stadium used to be. So I'm super excited. And, you know, the letter wasn't anything spectacular. It was just like four different lines and a questionnaire for me to fill out and send back to them. So I was super happy with that. But I remember the day after that, I got two more letters. And I got a letter from Georgia Tech and a letter from Purdue. And after that, it's a blur, because my action, me taking the initiative to reach out to people were connecting back with me. And I got letters from Penn State, Nebraska, Florida State, Southern Cal, Boston College, everyone, anyone you can name, I got them. And I got one letter from University of Kentucky. And back then, there was only two schools in America that had full contact football camps. One of them was UCLA. And the other one was University of Kentucky. So I took this opportunity. I recognized this was an opportunity for me, since I've been up here in this prep school league and I've been playing against these rich kids and not really knowing if I really am good. Let me go down to Kentucky and play against some other kids. And let's see if I can really do this. And so I remember my dad dropped me off at University of Kentucky. I was by myself and I'm walking through their facility, looking at the pictures on the walls that they could play in LSU and Alabama and Tennessee and Florida. And I was just, you know, you start to see, this is what I've been looking for. This is what I've been wanting this whole time. So I just got my pads and my suitcase and I'm walking through and I go to registration. And I remember I saw these two kids. One of them, I'll never forget his name, is Chuck LaFue. Was his name. And this guy was about 6'4", 6'5", and easily approaching 300 pounds. And I'm looking at him. I've never played against anybody that looked like that. And I thought to myself, this was a mistake. These people are going to kill me. And I just, you know, whatever, I'm here now, registered. And I remember I saw another kid and I was like, these guys are monsters. They're huge. You know, I didn't know that teenagers grew this big. And we go out to the first practice, and I was playing center. And we walked through a play that they were teaching us, and my assignment was to block the middle linebacker. And I remember when we got down on the line of scrimmage to run the play, this kid was ripped, very vascular. He's very muscular, maybe about 5'10". He looked like he was in the NFL now. And I thought, these people are going to kill me. I'm never going to get through this week. I don't know how I'm going to get to where I want to go. But I decided, you know what? I'm just going to hit him before he hits me, and we'll see what happens. So I snapped the football, run the play, and then I hit him, knocked him out cold. And that was not my intention. I felt really bad about that, actually. And I didn't mean to hurt anybody, you know? So they put in another linebacker, and we ran the play again, and I knocked that kid out, and that kid didn't play the rest of the week. And it was in this moment that I realized, like, okay, I got this. I got this. And from there, you know, the story goes on, but I have been talking for a minute, and I want to give you a moment since this is your show, Mark. And I'll continue the story as we go through and give you an opportunity to ask me what you want to ask me and what your listeners want to hear.
Oh, Chucky, really awesome stuff. I mean,
well, it gets better.
But I just got to ask the right questions to really pull out the entire masterpiece here. But I mean, that was really amazing just hearing that story, because a lot of people, like, when they see someone like you playing for the Steelers or any professional sport team, they just see you with the uniform on. They don't hear the story about you reaching out to all these colleges, going to Kentucky to see if you even measured or you were able to compete at that level. So, I mean, it's really incredible hearing that kind of story, because it's a story that we don't really get to hear about too much. And, I mean, at that moment when you go to Kentucky, you see how well you were performing, how did that then transition to, I really want to go all the way with this thing and go into the NFL?
You know, going back to, you know, when I was 7 and me and my brother Emmy every day would go out and play different sports every day, and I knew I was going to be an athlete. After Kentucky, you know, I went back to school. That summer I went home, and I was a little bit arrogant at that point, and I didn't work out as hard as I probably should have. And that's just being completely honest about it. And didn't play as well as I would have liked my senior year in high school. And at that point, I really didn't have a ton of schools interested, but I guess it's part of the recruiting process, and the number of people looking for you, it goes down more and more. So I had a couple of different schools that were interested, but I really didn't know where I stood with any of them. And after a while, school started to drop off, and there was only two schools left, and that was Kentucky and Purdue. And Purdue, I really hadn't talked to at that point. And I got a call one day on January 12th, 1996. I was a senior in high school, and it was Randy Feuchner. Now, for any football fans out there, the name might sound familiar because he is the offensive coordinator for the Steelers right now. But back then, he was the recruiting coordinator at Purdue. And he called me and he told me, he said, you know, we don't know if we're going to sign an offensive lineman, but if we are going to sign one, we want it to be you. So this was on a Sunday. So I'll call you on Wednesday after our meeting and let you know either way. So Wednesday comes, and I skipped all my classes. And back then, we only had one payphone in the hallway. There was I had never seen a cell phone in my life at this point. So I know this is going to sound, this part of the story is going to sound strange. But we had one payphone in the hall that we all shared. It was about 10 of us. And I commandeered the phone for the entire day. Nobody's allowed to make any phone calls or receive any phone calls until I get mine. And that was just something I did, you know. I mean, think about it like this. Like, I'm sitting on the phone rings, and I'm like, hello? Yeah, well, yeah, John's not here anymore. He ran away. I would have thought he told his mom that, but I got to go. Bye. Like, I got to leave this line clear in case Randy Feuchner calls me. I can't have the phone tied up because you want to talk to your son. I'm sorry. So I commandeered the phone the whole day. Didn't go to any classes. Didn't do anything. However, I did have a responsibility as the manager of the squash team back then, and I had some duties I had to do so that varsity squash could practice. So I had to leave. So I left, but because I was already down there, I worked out, I went to dinner, I came back from dinner and asking everybody, did anybody get a phone call from me? Did anybody get a phone call from me? Did anybody get a phone call from me? And everybody said no. So I went into a bathroom stall and I just started crying because I've been working at this my whole life. And, you know, being at Kentucky, it's like I was smelling it. It felt so close. And in this moment, it felt like it wasn't going to happen. And just like you need to do when you feel like you're down, you just brush yourself off. I brushed myself off. Plus, I skipped a whole bunch of school today. So I just went back to my room and started doing my schoolwork. And I remember at about midnight, a kid who's a sophomore came into my room. And sophomore is supposed to be in bed at that time. So I said, what are you doing? You're supposed to be asleep. And he's like, oh, man, I forgot. Some school called you. I don't remember who it was. And I was like, Purdue? He said, yeah, that was it. I was so happy that they actually did call that I wasn't even mad. And the next day, called Randy Fietner in the morning. He said, you know, being in New York, you want to fly here from JFK or from LaGuardia? And I said, I'll take a bicycle. I don't care. I just want to be there. I just want to come. So went there. So I got the call from him Sunday. Now this is Thursday. Friday, I fly out of JFK, go to Purdue. The guy was offered a scholarship on Sunday the 19th, and I accepted it. And at that point, that feeling of having a vision as an amateur adult at age 7 and realizing, feeling that it's coming into my reality was, you know, at that point, I knew that the NFL and the big goal was just a hop, skip, and a jump away. You know, the big thing is, you think about this just for your viewers, just to break it down into principles, because as an NLP practitioner, I'm always talking about principles. The principles in this story are, number one, when nobody was recruiting me, I had to do something. I didn't accept that as just, oh, well, nobody wants you. That's just the way it is. Nah, BS. I got to do something. So I took a chance and just reached out. That's number one. You got to take a chance. You have to bet on yourself. And so I did. I took a chance. Then, okay, another chance. I don't know if I'm really good enough. Now these people think, I sent them the letters, I sent them the tape. They think I'm good enough. Now I got to go prove it. So I went to Kentucky and took another chance and bet on myself. Then I got, you know, and they offered me a scholarship then, but it obviously ended up not taking that one. And, you know, when I went to Purdue, you know, we were a ragtag bunch. Purdue wasn't a very good school, and a lot of beautiful things happened in those years. And I really did develop myself and knew that I was putting myself in position to achieve my dream, and which I did. The thing that, you know, listeners out there, I hope take away from it is that you have to initiate it. Whatever your dream is, you have to initiate it. You have to decide what it is you want, regardless of how your circumstances look, regardless of what other people are saying. All that matters is what you think and what you want to create. And you have these, a lot of times we have these ideas in our heads as our expectations is how it's supposed to go. Well, that, if you let that go and you just figure out different ways you can push the plan forward, just from the step where you are to the next step, you know, going from high school to college, going from college to professional, just move forward one step at a time. You have to initiate it, and then you have to maintain it. It doesn't matter what your friends think. It doesn't matter what, you know, history tells you. It doesn't matter what's happened in the past. It doesn't matter. All that matters in your life is what you think and what you believe. And if you believe it and you take action, self-initiated action, self-maintained action, then you empower yourself to create the opportunities, the visions, the pictures you see in your own mind. And that's what I did as a kid. I didn't realize I was doing it at the time, but now as a NLP master practitioner, I understand in hindsight the steps that I took to create that success. And what I do as a speaker now is I help people to harness their own, what I call basic instructions. Like I did, is I had to figure out the steps for me. You know, I'm not necessarily like, you know, some of these superstar athletes. There was no, you know, there was no press conference on ESPN. I was not an All-American. I was not a five-star recruit. I just had a dream, and all I needed was one chance. And that's all I got was one chance. And I took it. But that's the way it had to happen for me. Now, other people out there, listeners, you want to be entrepreneurs, you want to be C-level executives, you want to make a difference in this world. Well, you need to figure out what it is you want, the same way I did at age 7, exactly what you want. Maintain your focus on that. And then take self-initiated and self-maintained action to bring that into your reality. It literally is that simple. What happens is we get in our own way. We start believing things. We start believing that we're not good enough, believing we're not strong enough, believing we're not tough enough to do it. When, if you don't put yourself out there, the same way I did it at University of Kentucky, you got to put yourself out there. You're never going to know if you're good enough. And if you don't believe it's possible, how do you expect somebody else to believe it? You see what I'm saying? And so as an NLP master practitioner, I work with clients now, developing athletes who want to move up from where they're at, you know, have dreams of playing high school, you know, varsity sports, have dreams of playing college sports, have dreams of playing professional sports, and help them to create their own plan of action as to how to get from where they are to where they want to go. Also work with business people, C-level executives and entrepreneurs, because at the end of the day, I had that success at a young age in sports. People have a lot of different dreams, a lot of different visions, a lot of different endeavors that people are chasing. However, the mental strategies, the part that matters the most is what's going on in your mind. It doesn't matter exactly how you're going to bring it into physical reality. You might be a writer. You might be a rapper. You might be a super smart scientist who wants to create a telescope better than the Hubble telescope. Everyone's got their own different dreams. One thing that we all have in common is we're all humans. We all have a human mind. And the human mind is the most powerful force in nature. Just look around you. So understand that you have the most powerful force in nature in your skull, in your head right now. You just need to know the basic instructions of how it works and how you can use that tool to create the life you want. And so that's where, you know, with the whole experience of getting that scholarship to Purdue, and, you know, there's a whole other story of things that happened at Purdue and some of the guys I've played with. Drew Brees was my quarterback for 4 years. He started 3 years when we were in college. I started 4 years. Now, I'm not saying I'm better than Drew. However, if you say I'm better than Drew, I'm not going to correct you. But you know, Drew Brees is somebody I've known for a long time, and I talk about him a lot in my speaking. Not so much what we know about him now, but how he was at age 18, 19, 20 that led to what you're seeing now. Wow.
I mean, one of the things that I do want to ask you, and that can lead into that, I mean, when I hear about any kind of professional athlete, where they are now, like you hear about some, for the top ones, like the more successful they are, it seems like the crazier of a work ethic they have to the person who may not want to put in that kind of work. But like these people have like really incredible work ethics. So I'm wondering if you could share how your work ethic towards the sport, and I'm sure that carried over towards life also, how it grew, because I know you mentioned that in the beginning you didn't put in enough time initially, and then that grew. I'm wondering if you could talk about how your work ethic grew being around all these awesome people at Purdue and also eventually on the Steelers?
Right. Well, big thing is having that happen to me my senior year, where I was not as prepared for that season as I would like to be. One of the things I teach people, you know, using NLP and using the skills I have now, is that everything that appears to be negative is actually good and has to happen. Like, I had to go through that experience and feel the consequences of not working hard. And having that happen to me back in 1995, my senior year playing football in high school, after that point, I was never going to let that happen to me again. I was never going to put myself into that position. And so literally not being in good enough shape is what created the work ethic. It's because I had to, you know, sometimes you got to touch the fire and get burned to learn not to touch it. And so literally by not working hard and then suffering the consequences of that taught me that it's on you. It's on you. It's like how good you're going to be is up to you. And a lot of times people don't want to put in that work, like you said, Mark. And it's not so much that they don't want to put in the work. It's just that they're not as focused on what it is they're trying to do. Like if you don't have a picture of yourself as being the best at what you do, if you don't believe that now, even if you're 16, 17, 18, 25, it doesn't matter. If you don't believe that right now, today, and you don't behave as such today, you got to work out like you're the greatest. Now, at age 16, at age 17, at age 18, now you work out like you're the greatest. And if you do that every single time, what do you think is going to happen 15 years from now?
You're going to be the greatest.
Does that make sense?
It's, yeah.
It's just like a book that I always suggest, and it's actually a requisite for my clients, The Slight Edge by Jeff Olson. And I know a lot of times, like you said, you see people how they are now. Like you see somebody like Drew Brees now as the number one passer in NFL history, not realizing that it's what he did every day from back in 97 when we were at Purdue until he broke that record on Monday Night Football. It was what you add up all those days between then and now. And that's how it happened. Not because he was playing, you know, PlayStation and then just got a call and was like, hey, you want to play? He's like, yeah, sure, I'll play, whatever. That's not how it goes. Drew Brees he believed he was the best there ever was when he was a kid. And he behaved as such every day. And so when you believe in yourself and you put in that effort that you believe is going to give you the advantage over everyone else now, that's going to make me the best, at least in this. If I'm lifting weights with a team, I want to make sure that I'm the best now in this room. And so then when we go into the stadium, we're playing against Wisconsin or Ohio State, I want to be the best out of all these people. And then when you match me up against everyone else in the conference, I want to be first team all Big Ten. I want to make sure I'm the best. And if you don't keep these big goals in mind when it's the middle of February and you have to go lift weights, then people, I got time to half-ass it. Like, no, if you're going to be the greatest, you have to decide that right now. And then you have to show me in everything you do. And to me, that's where a lot of times you see people like Antonio Brown, who's somebody I don't know personally, but he is on my team and I'm a Steelers alumni. So that's a person who I can point out who has got one of those crazy work ethics that you talk about. And because of his belief in his ability and what he's trying to do with his career, he shows you that in every workout, not just in Heinz Field on Sunday. He shows you that all the time. So just to answer this question, just to finish answering this question, you think about somebody like Drew Brees and all the accolades, all the records he has at the college level, at the professional level, there's one accolade he has that pretty much defines why he's the greatest. And it's an accolade that most people don't even know exists. Drew is an academic All-American Hall of Famer for his performance in academics. And what that tells you is that Drew Brees wins at everything. That's his attitude. Is I'm going to do everything I can and everything I can, and no matter what I'm doing, no matter what the endeavor is, no matter what the task is, I'm going to do it 1000% the best I can. And so when you do that in everything you do, winning in sports becomes easy. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm the greatest. And that's, you have to believe that and act like that now and tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day. And before you know it, however many years over time, one day they're going to be celebrating you as the greatest. What are you doing now? I don't care if you're 12. It doesn't matter. If that's what you want, you have to use your actions to prove it to yourself. Prove it every workout, even if there's nobody around. Is you have to decide this in your mind and then use your physical body and your energy and your effort and your emotion and put all of that into that belief. You can't just be in your head. You have to do it in real life. So it's like I'm practicing being the greatest. Well, what are we doing right now? Well, it's history class. Well, I'm paying attention to this teacher to retain this information, because as everyone else is trying to do it, we're all going to have a grade on this test. I want to make sure that mine is the best and compete to push yourself to the limit. One thing I'll tell you, and then I'm going to give the mic back to you, is human beings. We're at the top of the food chain here on this planet Earth, on this big blue ball in the middle of space. One thing most people don't realize is that humans are the only living thing on this planet that will do less than they're capable of. That's a human thing. Think about it. If you have a tree, how tall will a tree grow? As tall as it possibly can. It's going to put its roots down into the ground as far as it possibly can. And it's going to reach for the sky as far as it possibly can. You never heard of a tree growing halfway and being like, you know what? I'm cool. This is good. Yeah. No, it keeps going. It pushes to its maximum capacity. We as humans have the dignity of choice. It's up to you. Are you willing to push to your maximum capacity and find out what you're truly capable of? Because if you don't, then you never will.
That's definitely a very powerful, like, there's been a string of powerful messages throughout just that one response. I mean, it's really insightful to think that, if we really want to be the best, we should strive to be the best in every single area that we're doing. I mean, you should always really, if you, there's this saying, like, the way you do anything is the way you do everything. So, it makes sense to hear that Drew Brees was really on top of his academics, and he was also able to be on top of his football as well. And one of the things that I do want to address is that, in your situation, you were very active. You didn't really wait around. You made it a point to reach out to all these people. You made it a point to hog the phone for a whole day. So you were very active with your approach. And some people would say that it's like they would maybe do something and then hold off on it. So what really made you able to push through and continue to take action? Would you say it was just the size of your dream that made you take all this action and not settle for anything less? Or would you say it was something more also?
I think back then, I'm actually going to use an NLP theme to describe my mindset back then. And one of the themes of NLP is cause and effect. Now, you have to make sure you're always at cause, because cause means you're focused on the results and that whatever I do is going to get me the results I want. If you're at the effect end of that, you're focusing on the reasons. And essentially, you're focusing on the reasons why you can't do it. So you have to be a cause. And so to me, it didn't matter what was going on around me. I stayed focused on what can I do? What can I control? So like playing at Purdue, Joe Tiller was our head coach. He recently passed away in 2017. And he has so many sayings, so many philosophies that I speak to my clients and speak to groups every day about. And I talk about Coach Tiller a lot. And there was something he used to say about game day. And if you think about this in terms of whatever it is you want to be, just apply this principle to that. And he would say, listen, on game day, you cannot control the referee. You can't control the weather. You can't control the crowd. You can't control the playing surface. And you cannot control your opponent. There are two things you can control, though. Your effort and your execution. And that's where we stay at cause, focused on your effort and your execution. Then that's going to put you in position to win. But if you're talking about, well, you know, somebody else would, well, no, you're out of fact. You're coming up with reasons, or really another word for reasons is excuses. You're not focused on what you can do. You're not focused on what role you play in your own success. Most people are looking outside of themselves, waiting for some of that. Waiting for what? What are you waiting for? And so it's like, I can't give myself a scholarship. No. However, I can continue to work out like I'm the greatest. I can continue to reach out to people. I can continue to, you know, work on being the best at everything I do by being 100% in my relationships and my academics. And it's less about the size of the dream and more about the level of focus you have on your own effort and execution. Does that make sense?
Yes, and I like that control factor that we decide how much we put in.
Yeah, and it's really that. The minute, think about times when you feel frustrated and you believe that it's something else, somebody else's fault. It's, well, what can you do? I can't control what they do, but I can control what I do. And so if I just don't even worry about things I can't control, like the crowd or the playing surface or the weather, and just focus on what I can do and what I need to do and what I want, then you put yourself in position to have that. If you want to continue to blame other people, that's when, like you and I talked before, that's when you give away the power. If you say it's because of them, now they're in control of the situation, not you.
And I mean, a lot of really great insights to grasp here. I mean, I feel like, well, when something happens that feels out of our control, like, we could really focus on that, focus on what happens instead of what we can really do, is Chuck is really pointing out, like, we always have a choice in how we can respond to anything that happens to us, anything that happens outside. Like, we always get to choose how to respond, which is something that is very powerful for us. And I feel like something very powerful also, just to hear your thoughts on this question, because I do ask a lot of people about this. I know we've hit upon a lot of themes already that relate to this question I'm about to ask, but what do you believe holds most people back from reaching their full potential?
Their beliefs about themselves. It's all about what you believe. It's interesting. My company, what I do with NLP speaking and mental and emotional release, my company's called Basic Instructions. One of the things that most people don't know is that Basic Instructions is short for an acronym. And the acronym is Basic Instructions Before Leaving Earth. Now, if you take the first letter of each word, Basic Instructions Before Leaving Earth, what does that spell?
Bible.
Okay. Now, I do not preach religion. However, what I teach people is the power that what they believe in their faith is and the role it plays in your experience on this earth. That's what the Bible is all about. And that's what I'm all about. Now, the Bible has their stories and I got mine. But at the end of the day, it's all about what you believe. It's all about your faith in that belief. If you know, successful people take time. They make decisions quickly as to what they want. And then from that point, you don't change your mind. You've got to stick to this and stay focused on the end goal, that I want to be a billionaire, or I want to be a superstar basketball player, or I want to be, you know, the greatest journalist that ever lived. And you have to stay focused on that, because the minute you change your mind to do something else, you're starting over. One thing a lot of people don't realize is no matter how much effort you put in, it's not a waste of time until you quit. Once you quit, now all of that's a waste of time. But so long as you stay focused to keep moving forward, then all those efforts will pay off. You know, unsuccessful people change their mind all the time. Well, I think I'll do this. Well, maybe I should do that. I don't know. That's not going to work. It's not going to get you where you want to go. You have to decide where you want to go, and you have to maintain that focus and do everything along the way, each and every day that you wake up, in accordance with your vision of who you are. And once you start, you know, I'll give you this analogy as quickly as I can, since I've hogged the microphone today.
Oh, no worries. Keep hogging it. We love this.
So it really is all like The Wizard of Oz. Now, everybody's seen The Wizard of Oz, right? Pretty much. I've met one or two people who haven't seen it. They're freaks. But anyway, it's really like The Wizard of Oz. You think about it. When the movie starts, you're watching Dorothy just moving about her regular everyday life. And she encounters different people who she... different characters in her life. We all have people that are the characters in our life, people you interact with all the time. But all in all, as you watch, you realize how boring and mundane her life really is. I mean, it's so boring and mundane at the beginning of the movie that it was in black and white, remember?
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, a crisis happens. Just like happens that you go wrong every day, and then all of a sudden, a crisis happens. And her and Toto end up in the Land of Oz. And in the blink of an eye, life ain't so boring anymore now, is it? As a matter of fact, it's pretty scary and chaotic right now. I mean, why is everything in such vivid color now? What is the deal with all these short men? And why is that lady's skin green? And what's the deal with her attitude? You know something? Enough. I just want to go home. I just want to go home. I just want everything back to normal. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This is not working for me. And so she starts with, what should I do? What should I do? And what did everybody tell her? Go see the wizard. He'll fix it. Somebody else can fix your problem. That's what everybody told her, right? Go see the wizard. Go see the wizard. Follow the yellow brick road. So she buys into this BS. And she starts going out on the yellow brick road. I just got to get to the wizard. He can solve my problem. Somebody else can solve my problem. Somebody else can give me the one thing I truly desire in this life. Somebody can make my vision happen. And she's going down this yellow brick road, encountering all kinds of craziness, trying to get somebody else to fix her problem. Gets to the wizard, only to find out what? He cannot help you. Not only that, he got his own problems. Okay? But here's the kicker, though. Okay? Now, when the movie's over, we know it was all a dream, right? So those characters she met along the way, the Scarecrow, Tin Man, the Lion, who didn't think he was smart enough, didn't think he was tough enough, didn't think he had the courage, that was all her. It was a dream. That was in her head. That's how she felt. Okay? So as it went along, all of these four characters proved that, nah, they were smart enough. They were tough enough. They were brave enough. And then at the end, he said, well, what about me? I want to go home. I just want to go home. And it wasn't until she got the basic instructions of how to use those shoes that getting what she want was really simple. At the end of the day, you have the power. The first thing we see when Dorothy landed in Oz and she walks out of that house is she has those shoes. And we know at the end that those shoes were what was the power that she needed that got her home. So the whole entire crisis, she had the power to go home at any time. But it wasn't until she knew the basic instructions of how to use them. And when she did, it was real simple. Click three times and go home. That's life. That's your life. That's my life.
It's a really powerful example. I mean, I feel like, again, like it goes back to that control. We can really get ourselves out of any problem. I mean, it comes down to, okay, knowing what action we have to do and actually going ahead and doing it. And we can look for all these different reasons that it's out of our control, or that it's not so easy or simple, simple being the better word there. But in some cases, it really is simple. It's just doing a few different things and really committing to them each day. So I really like that story. I really like, I mean, you've mentioned so many great things during our interview. One thing you did mention, though, was The Slight Edge, which is definitely a great book. But I'm wondering if you could share with us three other books that you believe will have a positive impact on us.
Number one would be Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill. Outwitting the Devil really goes to what we're talking about here today, and how essentially you have to control what's going on in your mind if you want to create the life you want. And that book's really powerful. It was written by Napoleon Hill, who wrote it in 1938. It wasn't published until 2011, because the ideas in this book back then were so forward-thinking and really relate a lot more to our world now. And his wife feared for his safety in his professional life if he was going to come out with these new age ideas and how it was going to be received. However, right now is the time that we need that information more than ever in the world we're living in. And I think that's the number one book. You know, Slight Edge is another one. Think and Grow Rich, which is another book by Napoleon Hill, which was written the year before the book I mentioned. That book is a step-by-step guide and composed of research that Napoleon Hill did over 25 years, interviewing over 500 of the wealthiest and most successful people on the planet, breaking down how they did it into essentially a step-by-step guide. And that's what Think and Grow Rich is. Another book I would recommend is The Alchemist. And I can't remember exactly. Paulo Coelho. He's Brazilian. I don't know how to pronounce it. But The Alchemist is is another really great book. And that book is fiction. However, the message and the story pertains to all the things that we talked about today, in following your personal legend and understanding that you can't control all of the factors. However, you do have control over certain factors. And we all have a personal legend. We all have a potential that we can meet and will meet, so long as we pay attention to the omens, or what I'll call the opportunities, and then taking action based on the recognition of those opportunities. So Outwitting the Devil, Think and Grow Rich, The Alchemist. Those are three books I would recommend.
Chucky, thank you for sharing with us those great book recommendations. If you want to get those in the show notes, you want to see Content Marketing Secrets, which will also be in the show notes, markgaberty.com/E300 is the place to go. And before we wrap up this episode, Chucky, I've asked you several questions throughout our time together. I mean, you've already posed to us a few great questions that we should be asking ourselves, but can you let us know another question that you believe we need to be asking ourselves more often?
Well, I would ask ourselves, why do I care so much what other people think? And the reason why I say that is not with any type of arrogance or angst. It's just, understand that nobody's ever been behind your eyes, man. Nobody's ever been in your head. Nobody's ever felt your emotions. So in terms of knowing what it is that you want, what a life experience you want, the only thing that really matters is what you think and feel about it, because you're the only one affected. You're the only one. You are a one-time experience on this planet. Now, you can think about it. You might be a junior. You might have a son that's a junior, or he would be the third. But at the end of the day, those two people are not you. They've never been behind your eyes. They've never felt your emotions. They've never thought your thoughts, and they've never had your experiences. And so what that means is, in human history, before you were born and after you passed, there will never be another you again. And so why do we concern ourselves so much with what other people think about our experience? And that's definitely a question that I think we definitely need to ask ourselves, everybody, as to what really makes me happy, what makes me feel like me. I knew back when I was 7 what made me feel like me. You know, for you, it might be something different. It's up to you to figure out your basic instructions so you can click 3 times and get what you want.
Chucky, really awesome. Oh, you got any more to add? I don't want to.
No, I mean, to me, I'm a long-winded individual, if you haven't gathered that. I could talk all day. So I'm trying to just answer the question as thoroughly as I can and give as much value to you guys as I can.
Well, Chucky, you've definitely done that throughout this episode. I mean, the amount of value you've shared is really amazing. We appreciate you coming on the Breakthrough Success today. I know that your business, Basic Instructions, we will have that in the show notes. Are there any other places that you want us to go to learn more about you and stay in touch?
Well, I'm active on social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And so if you look up Chucky Okobie Basic Instructions NLP, you'll find me on all those different social media outlets too. And YouTube.
All right, all those social medias, those will all be in the show notes. But Chucky, once again, I really can't thank you enough for coming on the show. It was such a pleasure to have you on Breakthrough Success.
I appreciate you having me. And, you know, there's always going to be new things to talk about. So if you guys ever want me back, you know how to reach me.
Want to dominate the podcasting industry? Now you can with your free copy of my book, Podcast Domination. You'll learn how to launch, grow, and monetize your very own show. And whether you are a beginner or an expert, this book has a lot of golden nuggets for you. We'll cover the cost of producing this book. All we ask is that you cover the shipping. To get your copy, head over to markgaberti.com/PD.